Hi, my name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this podcast, we discuss subjects that might be creepy to some, and sometimes even frightening. Some of our episodes will deal with serious subject matter, while others will be more lighthearted. Please keep in mind that I am not an expert on any of the topics I cover, just an interested party, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone, and welcome back. My name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. Tonight I'll be covering this episode alone, and we're going to be covering a case that was a listener suggestion, so thank you to Bonnie for recommending it. On tonight's episode, we're going to discuss a case that haunts the people involved. Once you've heard about it, you won't be able to stop thinking about it, about how things happen so quickly, about how one decision that was made by some teenagers one night turned to tragedy, about how that one decision changed the course of so many people's lives. Tonight we're talking about the Lost Boys of Pickering, Ontario. Pickering is located in southern Ontario in the Durham region. It's right by Toronto. And Lake Ontario forms the south boundary of the city. In the early morning hours of March 17, 1995, a surveillance camera caught three boys breaking into the Frenchman Bay Marina. These boys were named Jamie, Michael, and Robbie, and that night they stole a replica 14-foot Boston Whaler. These boys were believed to be part of a larger group of six. According to an article on DurhamRegion.com by Kristen Callis, we do know the three entered the marina and took the boat that night, and the group may have also had a water tricycle with them. If you don't know what a water tricycle is, picture an oversized big wheel that floats on water. That was the last time that these three boys, along with three more of their friends, were seen. The six boys that were together that night were 17-year-old Jay Boyle, 18-year-old Chad Smith, 17-year-old Robbie Rumbolt, 17-year-old Jamie Lefebvre, 17-year-old Michael Cumming, and 16-year-old Danny Higgins. In the Durham Region article, they say that Danny's 17, but in most of the other articles I read, they do say that he's 16, so that's what we're going to go with tonight. Earlier that night, some friends had met for a party at Chad's new apartment. According to the article from DurhamRegion.com, Jay's sister Amanda was supposed to attend the party as well, but she was sick that day and was unable to go. The next morning, Amanda received a call from Jay's girlfriend. She and Jay had a child together and were living in a basement apartment. Jay's girlfriend told Amanda that Jay had not come home after the party the night before. According to a Globe and Mail article from 2005 by Anthony Reinhardt, the boys had taken a water tricycle out the day before for a joyride and left it untied outside the marina. Now, the night of the party, the group had left around 12:40 a.m., and they said they were going to goof around at the marina. It's a little bit odd to me that Chad left his own party. I mean, it's not impossible, but it just strikes me as a little strange that you would leave your own party. Now, it doesn't say how many people were actually there, so I suppose at that point there may have only been a few people left, just a few stragglers. I can assume they were drinking, and it is mentioned in a few of the articles that they were. But it's not clear if the group was intoxicated or only had a few drinks. At 1:48 a.m., as I mentioned earlier, three boys from the group were caught on camera entering the East Shore Marina. And then between 2 and 3 a.m., some witnesses later stated that they heard a boat on the water. It's not clear to me exactly what happened next. In the Durham Region article, they go on to say that at 3:30 a.m., the group was reported missing by two friends. Now, I'd love to know more about this report, but I couldn't find any information. If they were out on the water around 2 a.m., as the witnesses stated, how did these boys know by 3:30 that they were missing? Were they with them? Did they say they'd be back in 15 minutes? Why was the alarm raised that quickly? I have so many questions about this report, but I can't find any answers. It seems that it took about 36 hours for the police to put a search together for the boys. But I can see how it would have taken a while to put together the report of a stolen boat and water tricycle with the report of six missing teenagers. It just seems like two things that are reported separately and don't necessarily feel connected unless someone tells you they are, or as what happened here, they were seen on camera. But it did seem to the family that the reports weren't taken seriously. I think once they put two and two together about the boys having taken the boat, that's when, for the police, that they got very concerned, because if it means that the boys were out on the water, that could mean that all sorts of bad things could have happened. Finally, by 2 p.m. on March 19th, a search is underway, and the search will involve both military and police, as well as many volunteers. But the search was called off the next day. That being said, the Globe and Mail article does say that sort of volunteers with boats kept searching for a long time. The general feeling was, according to the Globe and Mail article, that the group may have run out of gas and ended up stranded somewhere. And I think at that moment, I mean, being March in Ontario on the water, it would have been really cold. So thinking that the boys were maybe stuck out there, time was of the essence. But after they didn't find them, I guess about 24 hours, maybe they realized that something even worse had happened. They did find the water tricycle drifting in the water, but they weren't really able to retrieve it because the water was really rough at that point. Some people think that the water tricycle was just nothing to do with what happened that night. Because they had left it untied, it may have just drifted away from where they had left it the night before. Despite all the searches by the police and the volunteers, no trace of the group was found. The only thing that was found was a gas can that washed ashore in Wilson, New York on March 29th, which is about 60 kilometers away from Pickering. This gas can was ID'd by someone at the marina where they stole the boat from, but I do feel like this is something that might be difficult to ID with 100% accuracy. I'm sure that many gas cans are quite similar looking and really hard to tell apart. This one did have bilingual markings and I think was a little banged up, so that's how the employee from the marina did ID it. But again, I think it is something a bit difficult to say for 100% certain belonged to that boat. There were eyewitness accounts of some of the boys being spotted in the U.S., but this never came to anything. The theory with the police is the boat must have struck something and sank. The water would have been very cold that night. It would have been very cold generally that time of year. And without life jackets, there would have been little chance of survival. According to what I was reading, it would take about 3 minutes for hypothermia to set in. The police believe that if the boat had just capsized, they would have found something. That boat was very hard to sink, so unless it actually struck something and sank, the police do believe they would have found the boat drifting on the lake. In 1998, which would have been about 3 years later, two sets of human remains were found in the Niagara River. One of the sets of remains were in a pair of jeans that Jay's family said resembled the jeans that he was wearing when he left. They were Levi's jeans. They were reddish orange, the ones that were found, and Jay did have a pair of red Levi's jeans. Now, the police said it was very improbable that these jeans were actually Jay's, but families and friends pushed for many years trying to get answers. They finally managed to get DNA back from the jeans, but it wasn't a match for Jay. And as I mentioned, the police really thought those chances were slim because, according to what I read, if I understand it correctly, the Niagara River actually flows into the lake and not vice versa. So it would have been difficult for the remains to drift into that river as the flow would have been the opposite direction. Unfortunately, this means the families are back to square one with no answers. The questions still remain. Where are the boys? How can six people go missing and not a single trace of them is found? It almost seems impossible. But that being said, Lake Ontario is an immense lake. You can stand on the edge of it and feel like you're standing on the edge of the ocean. And water, as we all know, can be very unforgiving. Unfortunately, it seems to me like the group probably drowned, but without finding any evidence or remains, I feel like it's still an open question for family and friends. That question is always with you. Did they just, for whatever reason, choose to leave? It does seem unlikely that six of them would up and leave and not a word from them would be heard. It feels like at one point one of them would have contacted family or friends, gotten in touch with someone, and that's not the case. No one's ever heard from them. Some of the parents of the boys do believe that they left and started a new life somewhere else. But others believe that it was a tragic accident and they drowned, but it still seems like something doesn't sit right. It's just that lack of evidence, the fact that only three of them were captured on camera. Again, I'd like to know more about that 3:30 a.m. report that reported them missing. I'd like to know who reported that and for what reason. I mean, I guess maybe they didn't come forward with all the truth because I'm assuming these are some of their friends who knew they were out on the water. Otherwise, why would you report them missing? But they mustn't have told the police that they were out on the water. Otherwise, you would believe that the police would have connected them with the boat sooner. It's just one of those cases that seems like we can figure out what happened, but there's just so many questions that it's hard to believe that it was a simple case of drowning. Again, six people missing with not a trace is just hard to wrap your head around. There is a private detective that's been looking into the case pro bono and has a tip line set up for anyone that believes they have any information. So you can reach out at lostboys.tipline@gmail.com if you believe you have any information related to this case. I'm going to wind down tonight's episode with something a little bit different. I'm assuming most people listening to the podcast are interested in true crime and probably already know this, but Joseph DeAngelo, who is the Golden State Killer, was sentenced recently. He'll be spending his life in prison without the possibility of parole. I don't really want to talk about him, but I do want to take a moment and acknowledge all the strong survivors who gave impact statements. Some of these people were survivors of his attacks. Others were family members of the survivors. Obviously, all of these people were strongly impacted by this one man's actions. One family member in particular, if you follow the news about this, you'll see that she flipped him off after her statement. But I can imagine all of these people showed tremendous courage and so much strength. And I think it's important to acknowledge how strong and brave they all are. I think we need to take a minute and remember what they've been through, remember everything that they survived, and acknowledge the courage that they're showing. As always, thanks to everyone who's been listening. If you'd like to share a moment of kindness or a suggestion for a case to cover, you can write me at crimeandmysterycanada@gmail.com. I'm also on Instagram at crimeandmysterycanada. You can join our Facebook group as well, which is Crime and Mystery Canada on Facebook. If you could take a minute to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review, I'd really appreciate it. I've really been enjoying recording these podcasts. There's some weeks that I have more time than others to actually put everything together. But I do appreciate everyone that clicks download, everyone that listens. Please let me know what you think. Please let me know what kinds of cases and episodes you'd like to see covered. I would really enjoy the feedback. Thanks again to everyone who's been listening. I hope my solo episode wasn't too tedious to listen to. I hope you have a good night.